And you are tuned in to CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Brian McDonald, and you are listening to Scald's Hall here in Vancouver. A couple of announcements. First, I think I should give a very brief but heartfelt shout out to Howard, Todd, Michael, David, Elvin, and Michelle, who may or may not be listening this evening. And coming up today, we have an lovely interview with Eleanor Hendricks, which will be playing first, and she's involved in a very interesting performative arts project, and she talked to us about it earlier this week. And then we'll be taking a listen to a couple of short but very interesting radio dramas, one by Rebecca Barnes and the other one by darkprojects.com. Another announcement, next week, in order to bring you the UBC Bike Rave, Scald's Hall will not be playing because the Bike Rave will be on during that time. So we will preempt that so that we can bring you the Bike Rave. And then on April the 3rd, our next show, I will be joining you for Scald's Hall. However, I will be joining you via the magic of post-production because I will be attending the Vancouver Fan Expo. Hopefully I'll be able to bring some retrospectives to that the following week and perhaps even some interviews, although I haven't heard back anything yet from the organizers. However, today was the last day for submissions. I submitted my request for interviews ages and ages ago, so I'm hoping to hear something this weekend. So at any rate, we have a lot to do and only an hour to do it in. So sit back, relax, and enjoy our programming here at Scald's Hall on CITR 101.9 FM.
The Association of Professional Engineers and Geoscientists of Vancouver and the Vancouver Public Library presents the 19th Annual EG Fest. Do you know what engineers and geoscientists do? Have you ever wondered how to become one? Come to the 19th Annual EG Fest this March 21st from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. EG Fest is a one-day event held during National Engineering and Geoscience Month. There will be lots of companies, organizations, and student teams showcasing their work. There will be interactive displays. This free event is great for the entire family. For more information, please search for the Association of Professional Engineers and Geoscientists of BC online. And come check out the 19th Annual EG Fest this March 21st.
You're tuned in to CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Brian McDonald, and you're listening to Scald's Hall. Tonight, we have a very special guest, Eleanor Hendricks. Good evening.
Good evening.
And how are you tonight?
I'm good, Brian. Thank you.
Before we get into what you're working on right this moment, can you tell us a little bit about how you came to be a performance artist?
There was a decisive moment last year when I got involved in a collaboration with several other educators and co-design group. We prepared a couple of workshops for some educational conferences up at FAU and one at UBC. Collaboration really got me going on the track that I'm heading now, which is using my choreographic training to think and experience ecosystem. That could be my new starting point and probably what's most interesting to our listeners here. So
you're working on combining dance performance with an understanding of the ecosystem, is that correct?
Exactly, yeah.
And who is the audience that you're hoping to target with this?
How about all of us? Really, it's not very complicated. I'm not teaching science with dance. What I'm trying to do and what my colleagues and I have been thinking a lot about is raising awareness, getting people maybe just to, you know, take a little time out of their very busy schedules and hang out together and maybe play act trees and play act flying squirrels and, you know, sing along, do a little rhyming, little wordplay, rhythm, clap your hands, etc., things like that. I think the premise for the choreography is kind of simple. It's getting people to collaborate and think a little bit for a few minutes about the environment and about the other organisms that are surviving and not surviving, living and doing their thing while we do our thing.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about the exact nature of the choreography you're working on right now?
You know, it's pretty simple. we were walking this. So this recent choreography is called Pseudo Suga Dance. Pseudo Suga, what it means is Douglas fir tree. It's Latin.
It's the scientific name of the Douglas fir.
I was walking with Susan, a friend. She's an educator and works with co-design. It's in Central Park. We were just enjoying our walk, discussing the trees and looking at them. And a little Douglas squirrel, you know, came out and was harassing or being harassed by one of the bigger, much bigger gray squirrels. And that got me thinking about the green belt, about the number of Douglas fir trees and the number of old Douglas fir trees. There, of course, there aren't very many old growth in the Lower Mainland. It was really that relationship, the interdependency of the squirrel, this particular kind of squirrel and this particular kind of tree, that got me going. And I came home and I looked up Douglas fir tree and saw that this great name, Sudotsuga, which really means false hemlock, that would be the literal translation. It just got me going, and then the next thing I know, I'm reading about mycorrhizal fungi and thinking about what's in the soil and these symbiotic relationships. I started to think about how can I transpose this? How can I take this from scientific way of looking at these things, this, take this distance out of this relationship that a human being has to this environment and put it in our bodies, you know, embody that, those systems. That's what we're working on. That's what we're doing. And we came up with the Sudasuga dance. So we're looking at four organisms, basically, in this dance. Can't look at them all.
Tell us a little bit about that. What is the Sudasuga dance?
Basically, what are we doing? We're the tree, for example, and the fungi keep a rhythm. They have a couple bars that they repeat, and then another couple bars that they repeat. A real simple rhythm. The tree has a little rattle, like a shaker, so it's percussive. Have really simple gestures, simple movements that they sort of are dialoguing between each other, I guess you could say.
People are going to perform the various roles of the plants and animals.
That's it. So we are inviting people to learn this simple rhythm, this shaker, you know, shake, 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 and the fungi to learn the snap, when to snap, you know, keeping this kind of little dialogue going. We're inviting people to just get up and do that and to pretend to be that so that other things can happen. So they're the percussive section. And then we have the Douglas squirrels come in with a little melody, and they have a little choreographed path among the trees. And I don't want to give it all away, but there is also at some point the predator who arrives, the owl, and the owl plays its role. And then we repeat the whole system again. There is an ending to the cycles. Could repeat endlessly, I suppose, if we didn't impose an ending.
It's an interactive presentation. You said before that you had been working with educators. Is this going to be used in an education environment of some sort?
I think it could be, like the idea of going directly into community centers, neighborhood houses, and literally dancing in the park and inviting visitors, dog walkers, and whatnot, to simply be curious about what we're doing and join in. We've scheduled a few rehearsals. They're just open rehearsals. Mainly at the moment, it's word of mouth. It's a friend who tells another friend who says, hey, there's this choreographer who needs a tree. You want to come out with me and be a tree for an hour? But does it have an educational value? Absolutely. Absolutely. The choreography that we worked on last year was basically traced the salmon run up the stream. So we had salmon, we had water, we had some of the predators there. And the dance has a game-like quality. That's pretty important. There's very lighthearted.
So you mentioned you did a similar performance last year using salmon.
I think it's a kind of fun way at getting at some of these questions. And then we have, of course, the fact sheet that you can download from our website, or that, you know, we're happy to give out. Mm. And you can, you know, go from this experience into the science. I'm hoping that these will be picked up. It's hard to say, but I think that it's just really also really great to be out in the community where you have parents and kids and single people of all ages, and they don't expect this. It's that there's a lot. I mean, I'm hoping that there'll be other collaborations with other artists. I don't feel like being a lone choreographer. I think I would love to work with other musicians. In this case, the composition is my own, although I would say that I have to admit that I used the melody that the squirrel sings is lifted from an African lullaby. So it's a very mellow. The performance happens at 8:30 at night, so it will be dark. There is a kind of lulling, meditative, or maybe even it's a very mellow piece.
You mentioned before that there were worksheets and other supplementary materials that were available on your website.
It's pretty new. I think you have to actually type in the URL in order to fall on it, find it. It's www.communityverve.ca.
So www.communityverve, all one word, all lowercase, .ca. And we'll share that link on our social media feeds at Skulls Hall. And that way people can get a bit of a taste of what this might look like.
Great. Thank you. That's excellent.
Can you tell us a little bit about the people that you've been working with?
The co-design group, Stanley King and Susan Chung, they have been incredible mentors, actually. Their youth manual is also quite a developed, they have a very nice developed blog that you can visit, and they work with youth drawing with them and teaching them how to see the environment through drawing. But they do even much more than that. They really delve into the question of the intricate web, I guess you could say, of all of the organisms. I highly recommend any of your listeners to check out their work.
You said that you're working on a workshop right now. Can you tell us a little bit about the performance that you have planned?
Okay, yeah. So it's not exactly a workshop. I would say they're community classes. Sometimes we have 5 or 6 people show up. Other times we've been 9 or 10. I share the concept, and then we break it down and we look at the different parts. We get people, you know, out of their chairs and playing a part in the dance. So we go right through learning it to performing it. We're thrilled to see anyone come out at any of the, like I said, sort of mini performances. And there's, of course, no obligation to perform at NightQuest. But it will be an interesting convergence, I think, of these different groups, of the different people who are able to come out that night.
And so where could people go in order to attend these mini performances?
We only have a couple more rehearsals scheduled, but we are trying to kind of do a convergence at Trout Lake on March 21st. Is that a Saturday?
Yes.
Saturday afternoon. That's pretty much confirmed. And likely it will be in the afternoon, early afternoon, something like 2:30. The last public rehearsal will be at Sunnyside Park. I believe it's for the Friday 27th, and that's 7:30 in the evening, which is...
So you have a Facebook page. Can people get in touch with you if they're interested in these performances via that?
The best way to get in touch with us is info@communityverve.ca.
info@communityverve.ca. Okay, and we'll repeat that at the end of the program. Do you have any plans to attempt to offer this as sort of like an educational resource for, say, elementary school students?
I think if we can get some teachers on board, there are a couple of our collaborators who are teachers. You said elementary school. Well, some of our dancers are from Gladstone High School. And I think that their interests at grade 11, 10 and 11 students, I think they're one of the reasons they're into it is this idea of community service and this idea of being mentors to other people. They're having fun doing the dance, doing the performance, that's for sure. But they know that behind the performance there's a backstory, and the backstory is quite rich and vital. I mean, I think there's a message there that they realize is important and that they would want to be part of that transmission. That there's a fragile balance between these organisms and we around us, and we want to keep this balance. We want to take care of it. We want to be attentive to, and we want to listen, and we want to be aware of what's at stake. And I think the dance is kind of funny. It can easily fall apart when you're not really rehearsing with people very much. Some people will come to one rehearsal and then we'll be performing at NightQuest or we'll be performing wherever it's, you know, next scheduled. You know, anything can happen. That's really good. That's what the whole dance is about, understanding how something that's intricate holds together. I'm more than happy to teach or show this or share this with any elementary school teacher who's interested. And it's simple enough that with one or two rehearsals, they could produce this in a classroom. Between two teachers could have, you know, a couple of classrooms go out into the playground and put this on during lunch break or after school or class, whatever. I certainly find it exciting to think about, and there's a lot you can do. You can, of course, involve the students in the choreography. And that's really the next step. In the case of working with the community, you don't necessarily get the commitment. People don't quite have time to go to lots of rehearsals. So a lot of this is prepared and sort of simplified so that, you know, someone can just come in after 5-10 minutes of repeating a little rhythm. They've got it. They feel comfortable. The next step is in the choral and the relating to the other groups. There's a new challenge that can throw you off when now you're singing against someone or you're shaking it. You've got someone with a different rhythmic pattern. Then, you know, you have a few repetitions of that and you've got that under control. So there's these little challenges, little hurdles that get over. And then the next thing you know, it's all hanging together and you feel kind of satisfied. But in a classroom, you can, you know, deconstruct that, right? Go right back to, hey, what could a fungi sound like? Or what does this kind of tree move like? What part of your body would you move if you want to portray the branches or the trunk? And then the kids are coming up with the ideas. And I think that's fantastic.
Yeah. Do you have any final parting thoughts for us before we go?
In movement and in power of simple gestures and movements, coordinated, people taking time out of their, you know, really busy schedules. This performance is not a product, you know, it's fine to come and watch us, but the meaning is in the doing. The value is the experience itself of being in that group and feeling that you belong to this ecosystem, which is being developed and elaborated and explored by the dance itself. So I guess that would be take a little risk. It's a risk. A lot of times, you know, we're not doing aerobics. We're not using music. I can't point to the soundtrack so you can get familiarity with it. So we make the music, we dance and move to the sounds we're making, and we're doing it together, and anything could happen. I don't know if it's really happening, but it's an exploration, and it's a piece of work. It's a piece of art.
Well, thank you very much for coming on and talking with us here at Skulls Hall.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much, Brian.
Yes, and you've been talking with Eleanor Hendricks. You can go to her website at www.communityverve.ca. The project can be reached at info@communityverve.ca. And once again, thank you very much.
Thank you.
At Dunkin' Donuts, each and every
radio show
is brewed fresh and served fresh at the peak of its flavor. If you're a tough customer, only the taste of this
radio show
will do. So go ahead, let Dunkin' Donuts make your
radio experience
exquisite.
Indeed.
Dunkin' Donuts, serving sweet treats from the Pop Underground. Thursdays, noon to 1.
Automated reminder message. Your work and income benefit eligibility seminar is
tomorrow
at
9 a.m.
Goodbye.
What do you mean you recommend denial?
I'm sorry, Caroline, but I just can't put you forward as a candidate for the sickness benefit.
What?
You seem perfectly fit for work.
I'm not.
How do you mean?
Okay, look, Evelyn, I have a mental disorder, I swear.
Well, I find that hard to believe, young lady. You coped perfectly well during our group seminars.
No, really, that was just a coping mechanism. Yeah, a coping mechanism. I just can't afford the diagnosis. Please don't make me apply for jobs. I'll crack, I'm warning you.
Caroline, I'm a caseworker. I can't bend the rules for one person without proof. There's nothing I can do.
What?
Now, there's plenty of lovely commercial cleaning jobs up for grabs at the moment.
I won't do it.
Harry Inway?
Hi.
Rochelle Hardy.
Hello, sir.
What a pickle we have here.
Start from the beginning. Tell me about your caseworker. What was she like?
I didn't like her.
I did. I mean, sort of.
Hi, guys. I'm Caroline. I'll be your caseworker today. Come in. What are your names?
Rochelle.
Oh.
I'm Harry. Are you new? Evelyn takes us normally.
Yes, actually. This is my first day, so bear with me, would you?
You're way hotter than old Evelyn.
Oh, jeez. Sexist much?
Oh, it's fine. Boys will be boys. And you're not bad yourself, Harry.
Wow. Inappropriate.
So, what should we start with?
Shouldn't you know?
Oh, Evelyn's notes are a bit hard to decipher.
This is our last seminar. The one when you decide if we're eligible for a benefit or not.
Ah, yes. Of course, I'm familiar with this.
I would hope so.
Did you bring your work books?
Sure did.
Well, get them out and take a seat. Right. Let's start by getting to know each other. The workbook says to outline your long-term goals. The more solid they are, the more likely your dreams will come true. Right. Rochelle?
Just finished my gender and women's studies degree. I'm a feminist and I'd like to spend my life helping women in the community.
Mm. Well, now who's being sexist?
What?
What about all the men who need help?
She's got you there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even going to reply to that.
Good. Not talking back to your superiors is a difficult skill. Well done. Now, you, Harry, what's your goal?
I want to be a game designer.
Gaming is a booming industry. Maybe you should consider it too, Rochelle? Right, let's go on to filling out these workbooks. You got your pens?
It all sounds quite normal, doesn't it?
Caroline was a stupid bitch. I hate her.
Shut up, Rochelle. Wasn't all her fault. She's sick.
Whatever. You just wanted to get into her pants.
Hey, calm down. Don't say anything you might regret. Remember, we're recording this conversation. Just tell the story straight. What did she do?
I actually found her kind of motivational. Well, when I say motivational, it was just that she...
Harry, you are positively whizzing through this workbook. Gold star. Oh,
thanks, Caroline. It's pretty easy.
Sure is, hey? Okay, how are you going, Rochelle?
My pen is running out of ink.
Oh, sorry. You'll just have to make do. These are special recycled work and income pens.
What are they made of? Denied assistance forms?
Let's have a look, shall we? You're doing it wrong. Start again.
Damn it!
Hey, Caroline, this bit says job performance test results. What's this?
Yes, that's the exciting bit. Yes, let me go and get stuff out of the supply room. I'll just turn on a bit of music while you work. Okay, back in a tick.
Good riddance.
Why, hello, Evelyn. Quite comfortable, are we? Oh, they can't hear you. I've taken care of that.
Get off!
What's she doing in that storeroom?
Sounds like she stubbed her toe or something. Who cares? God, Harry, I can't wait for today to be over.
Want another kick, Evelyn? Face it, you can't beat me. You can't escape. Oh, but since you think you can, I'd better tie you up a little tighter, don't you think? Keep quiet. I said shut up or I'll poke your eye out with a denied assistance pen.
I don't know about you, Rochelle, but I just want my benefit approved. I'm flat broke.
That's the only reason I'm here, obviously.
Not for my company? Too bad. Anyway, I have a plan. I don't mind flirting with a sexy piece of ass if it gets me some cold, hard cash.
Oh, honestly, Harry, I can't believe you. Nice 1 second and misogynistic ass the next. Do you ever think you'll get a girl? Oh, you're such a sexist pig. You're unbelievable.
Oh. Sexist pig, eh, Rochelle?
Caroline, I put you in
my... I'm back. Sexist pig. Going on about that again. That's not good, Rochelle. Perhaps you'll have a little more luck job hunting if you were more friendly to men.
Oh, you freaking...
Caroline.
Yep?
Well, we thought we heard you trip or something.
Oh.
Yes, I did. Silly me. I'm fine, though.
What's all that stuff you've got?
Why, I'm glad you asked, Harry. It's, stand up and bend over.
What?
Okay. I think I'm beginning to understand. I shouldn't be saying this, but... don't be too hard on yourselves. It's just a really unfortunate situation, you know? I've never seen anything like it in my career.
I feel so awful.
Let's just try and get things straight. So, this is when things started getting a little... out of the ordinary.
Oh, yeah.
Bend over?
You hurt me, Harry.
Oh. Don't mind if I do, Caroline.
Don't get too excited. I'm just going to measure you up and calculate your BMI. It's important you're in tip-top condition if you want to be happy in the new job we'll find you. Right. You next, Rochelle.
Oh, get your hands off me. Since when do wins monitor your size?
New policy?
I refuse. I think it's sizes.
Don't worry, Rochelle. Heffalump is a size.
Zing on you, Harry.
I will not stand here and be insulted. Oh. I'm laying a complaint right now. What? The stupid door won't open.
Need a man, Rochelle?
No, it's locked. Why are we locked in?
That's another new policy. Oh, yes, don't want you lot disappearing off for a coffee and never coming back.
Get me out, Caroline.
I'm afraid I can't do that.
Yeah, she can't. It's the new policy. You're stuck here.
There must be another way out. Ah, the supply room.
I wouldn't touch that door if I were you.
Too late.
Whoa. What?
Is that...
Holy shit. Is that Evelyn?
How did she get in there?
Come on, Evelyn. Come on. Help me free you, Harry.
Okay.
Don't touch her.
What?
Why? Caroline?
I'll show you why.
She pulled a gun.
She did. And you don't say no to a gun.
And Evelyn?
She was okay. She just looked scared.
This is why. Who's crazy now, Evelyn? It's me, isn't it? Isn't it? Yeah, I thought so.
Crazy!
Why, thank you.
Put the gun down, Caroline.
Not a chance. Sit down and finish your workbooks. You've got 15 minutes. Everyone gets benefits on Caroline's watch.
Okay, okay.
We'll go sit where it's quiet.
Go then, get it done.
We're going, we're going. Okay.
I'm definitely crazy, aren't I, Evelyn?
Rochelle, that gun.
It's so scary.
Don't freak out. She's obviously a psycho, but that's not a real gun.
What? Are you sure?
Yeah. It looks just like that water pistol I got for my little cousin for his birthday.
Oh, my God. What a relief.
Trust me. I know guns. I've played a lot of games.
Who thought that skill would ever be of any use?
Shut up. Anyway, when I say go, yeah, you grab Evelyn and I'll tackle Caroline and we'll call for help. Right? Right?
Right. Gotcha.
Oi, what are you two whispering about?
We've finished our workbooks.
Oh, fabulous. Let's take a look.
Sure. Here.
Hey, these aren't finished.
Go, Rochelle. Help Evelyn. Give me that gun, Caroline.
Come on, Evelyn. Stand up.
Give it to me. Ah.
Give it back. It's my gun. I'll do what I want.
I've got it. Rochelle, call for help.
Help. Help us. Caroline is insane.
Harry, you give me back that gun right now.
What? It's not even real, you crazy bitch. See?
You shot Evelyn!
Oh, dear.
Oh, shit. Evelyn. Evelyn, wake up. Oh, I'm so sorry. Wake up. I'm sorry. Oh, please. No, no, please. Oh, no, 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 no. But it was an accident.
He didn't mean it.
I understand, but you did pull the trigger, Harry. Right? You did it.
Yes. I killed Evelyn Wright.
Hello, Caroline King. This is a work and income automated message. Your sickness benefit application has been approved. I repeat, your sickness benefit application has been approved. Have a nice day.
Everybody Wins was part of the Radio New Zealand Toi Whakaari Audio Drama Project 2011. In Everybody Wins, you heard final year acting students Tawanda Manyimo, Terina Thompson, Leon Wadham and Hayley Brown. Everybody Wins was written by Rebecca Barnes and engineered by Jason Takari. The executive producer was Adam McCauley for Radio New Zealand National.
For over 30 years, Discord has been bringing Vancouver local independent music journalism. If you're a fan, check out the Discorder readership survey on our site at discorder.ca. You could have a chance to win gift certificates to the Rickshaw, the Lido, and Vinyl Records.
You're listening to audio drama in a darker shade at darkerprojects.com. And now our feature presentation.
Darker Projects presents Tales from the Museum, a mini-series written by Charles Russell, starring Perry Whittle as Keith Nash.
It was almost quitting time at the museum. The staff had successfully run 3 groups of high schoolers through the annual sculpture exhibit and lived to tell about it. I was just about to leave my office when someone started banging on my door.
Nash, get downstairs fast. Something is wrong with one of the grad systems.
What?
Hurry, man. I have to get something out of my office.
Stein is the museum's herpetologist, the snake guy. He's one of those small-framed men who never lose their composure. That alone was enough to get me moving. I hit the stairs and ran down to the first floor. There was a group of people at the door to the staff lounge. I muscled my way through them and into the lounge. There on the couch lay Harry. He was one of the grad assistants who helped staff this place. He wasn't moving, and his flesh was a sickly pallor.
Nash, did you see Dr. Stein?
Just now. He was running toward his office. What happened here?
We found him passed out in the vestibule. This note was on the floor next to him.
He has been injected with snake venom. He dies if you do not meet our demands. Do not alert the police or the hospital. We will contact you. Argus.
Let me through. Let me through, I say. Nash, roll his sleeve up.
What is that, Doc?
This is a broad-spectrum anti-venom. I always keep a couple vials of it in my cooler. Sorry, my boy. I know that hurts. I've never been good at giving shots.
Someone really needs to start talking to me.
We found him in the lobby with that note. We dragged him in here. That's about where you came in.
Well, that clears everything up. Casey?
Hello, Regional Museum. Right. Please hold. I'm putting you on the speaker.
Who is in charge?
Dr. Helene Mancuso. I'm the senior staff person present. To whom am I speaking?
My name is Argus. I trust you found the young man.
We did. What did you do to him?
Your friend has been injected with distilled cobra venom. The red cobra, to be precise. He has at most 4 hours to live. To his credit, he put up quite a struggle.
If that's true about the red cobra venom, he's right. Maybe 4 hours at the outside.
Be assured it is the truth. The only stores of that rather unique anti-venom are in New York City and New Delhi. And the vial I'm holding now.
What do you want?
We want the Dambala spear.
The what?
Please, do not insult me.
I'm on it.
We will make contact with you in 1/2 hour with further instructions. Make no mistake, we are dedicatedly serious in this pursuit. Your friend's life is in the balance.
Doc?
The red cobra is a very rare species, found only on Madagascar. The venom is a very particularly nasty neurotoxin. The anti-venom that I administrate won't even slow it down. As far as Dambala goes, those who practice voodoo believe that Dambala and Avido Ido were the two serpents that created the world.
Voodoo.
He's a world religion student at the university. He's doing a comparative paper on various belief structures.
Was voodoo one of the comparisons?
I don't know.
Found it.
Casey laid it on the table. It was a 7-foot-long shaft of dark, stained wood. At one end was a wicked-looking spearhead, complete with a very business-like razor-sharp edge and a wicked-looking jagged edge. Halfway along its length, a metal snake began to wrap itself around the staff. And at the top end, the serpent held a globe in its fangs. The spearhead and the snake were both gold-plated.
Is it an artifact?
No, Mom. It's a part of the sculpture exhibit. This is a work by Sam Awido of Kenya. It's not entitled Dambala Spear, by the way. It's called Symbolicis. It represents the proud warriors being enslaved and slavery swallowing their world.
How do you know that?
It's on the display card.
So, what we have is a piece of modern art, a poisoned intern, and a mysterious voice on the phone. Can't wait to see what he wants when he calls back. Argus was true to his word. A half hour later...
Dr. Mancuso, do you have the object?
We do.
Excellent. Bring it to the corner of 10th and Depot Street. We will take possession there. You will come alone.
I don't think so.
Who speaks?
The name's Nash. Keith Nash. I'm the museum's special services coordinator. There's no way Dr. Mancuso is coming alone. Besides, we both know you won't be alone, right?
Of course not. 20 minutes, Doctor. Don't be late.
I'll get my gun.
There it is. 10th and Depot. Park right here. What a charming neighborhood.
The old warehouse district. When I was a cop, we hardly ever patrolled through here.
Is that your subtle way of reminding me that we're on our own?
Basically.
Well, it wasn't reassuring. Just wonder how long we'll have to wait.
Not long. A couple of seconds.
How do you know?
'Cause three cars just came around the corner. No headlights, and they're coming this way. They knew what they were doing. One car parked in front of us, one behind, the other beside us. We were boxed in. Two men climbed out of the front car and took up clear firing positions. I didn't see any firearms, but I didn't doubt for a second that there were any. My own piece was in my coat pocket. In my rearview mirror, I saw a door open on the rear vehicle. I could see a tall form walking towards us.
Nash?
Keep your hands where they can see them. You got the spear ready?
It's in the back seat.
Dr. Mancuso, Mr. Nash, please step out of your vehicle. Now, where is the spear?
Argus was a tall man with pale skin. He and the goons were dressed in black clothing. His skeletal fingers were long and bony. In back, where's the anti-venom?
I have it here.
Argus motioned to one of his goons. The goon opened my back door and pulled out the spear. He pulled it out of the canvas bag and held it aloft. The golden blade and snake reflected the light from the single street lamp.
Excellent.
The goon walked over to Argus, dropped to one knee, and presented the spear.
A magnificent piece of work. I can feel the power trapped within. Power begging to be released.
I hope the two of you are very happy together. Now give us the anti-venom.
Of course. Seize them.
Hey! Things happened fast. More goons jumped out of the cars and came at us. One grabbed Helene. Two more started mixing it up with me. I'm holding my own until someone cracks me in the back of the skull with a blackjack. The last thing I remember as a tide of darkness sweeps over me is Argus. Laugh. I have no idea how long I was out. I do know that I came to on a cold cement floor in a dark room. Slowly, I realized that the throbbing in my ears was drums.
Nash! Nash, my boy! You're alive!
Ow, not so loud, Doc. Being awake really hurts right now. Hey, wait a minute, what are you doing here?
Interesting story. I sent everybody home. I was locking the front door when two large gentlemen pushed a way in. One of them tasered me. He actually used a taser. At any rate, I regained consciousness in his place. They tossed you in here a few minutes ago.
What about Harry?
I haven't seen him. Dr. Mancuso?
Last I saw of her, she was struggling with one of Argus's goons. Hear that?
I hope that's a good thing.
Gentlemen, welcome to our lair. The lair of the serpent.
Where's Dr. Mancuso?
You will be joining her momentarily. In the meantime, follow me.
And if we choose not to?
That would be most unfortunate for Dr. Mancuso.
So we followed. Argus led us down a long, narrow, and dimly lit corridor. We stopped at a heavy-looking wooden door. We entered a wide, octagonal room. The walls were covered by black drapes. The floor was painted a blood red. The place was lit by a series of candelabras. There were maybe 20 people standing around a central altar. These people were all dressed in hooded black robes that hid their features. I couldn't see what was on the altar. One of Argus's goons walked up behind me and clamped a hand on my shoulder. I could feel the muzzle of something in the small of my back.
Listen carefully, both of you. Maxime here is armed. If either of you try to disrupt this service, he will shoot you. With your pistol, Mr. Nash.
We get it. Where's Dr. Mancuso?
The lovely Helene Mancuso will be joining us very soon. Be patient, Sergeant Nash. Please don't act shocked. I know all about your career as a policeman and as an undercover agent with the narcotics division. I know about the bullet in your leg and the raid that went awry. I know how your lieutenant cashed in a favor to get you the job at the museum. Dr. Stein, I also know about the criminal charges against you in Europe and the Interpol warrants.
Interpol?
Long story.
The serpent knows all. Ah, we begin.
Argus strolled to the front of the group. Two of the robed figures were walking around the perimeter of the room, lighting the candelabras. A disturbing thought had just come to me. Hey, Doc, about your Interpol situation.
Not now, Nash.
Did Harry know about it?
I may have mentioned it to him. Why?
Doc, we've been played. Harry was in on this.
What?
Think about it. He hooks up with these people working on that paper. They convert him. They want that spear. He can't get it out. They can't break in to steal it. But they can cook up a game where Stupid here brings it out to him. How else could Argus have known about us? I bet that Harry's under one of these robes right now.
So, what do we do?
I don't know.
Seekers of knowledge, followers of the path, tonight is truly a milestone for our sect. Tonight we welcome into the body of the serpent our newest acolyte. We also offer sustenance to the serpent. Bring forth the blood sacrifice.
To our left, the curtains parted. Helene Mancuso walked out. She was between two of Argus's goons. Her eyes looked glazed and her steps were shaky. Drugged, maybe.
Bring forth the serpent.
Nash!
Two more of the robed figures entered. Between them, they carried a large wooden box. Helene was laid down on the altar. The box was placed near her. Maxime, behind me, prodded me with the pistol. He stepped closer, right to the edge of the altar.
We summon the serpent.
He took the lid off the box. He struck the box three times with the side of the spearhead. Then he jumped back. Something was moving in the darkness of the box.
Come. Come and feed.
A large serpentine head appeared. A huge, rust-colored snake was crawling out of the box. I assumed this was the Red Cobra. Hey, Doc.
Yes?
In case this doesn't work, nice knowing you. I spun and grabbed Maxime's gun hand. I twisted it to the side and hit him hard on his jaw. The goon staggered back, knocking one of the candelabras against the drapes. He dropped the pistol. The drapes began to smolder, then caught flame. The goon scrambled to his feet and charged at me. I was able to grab him, shift him, and flip him onto the altar between Helene and the cobra. The snake spread its hood and sank its fangs into it. The fire was spreading fast, and the people in robes were running towards the two exits. I scooped up my piece and brought it to bear on where Argus had been standing. He was gone.
The flames! We're cut off!
I know. Get over there where Argus was standing. He escaped. See if there's a back way out of here. I ran to the altar and slung Helene over my shoulder. The cobra raised his ugly self off the dying goon. I blew its ugly snake head off. It collapsed into a writhing mass on top of the goon.
Ash, over here! Come on, hurry!
Argus's escape tunnel led to a storage building next door. We climbed out and made it back to my car before the first fire trucks arrived. It would take the fire department the better part of the night to get the warehouse fire under control. The CSI team would find a human skeleton and what appeared to be the partial skeleton of a large snake. Me? I had the sick feeling that we hadn't seen the last of Argus.
Believers, followers of the path, today we have taken into our body that of our newest acolyte. He has passed the test of the venom and has showed his loyalty by turning his back on his past life. Today we have recovered the sacred piece forged by the infidel Awido. Now its strength and its symbol belong to us. However, now our existence is known and enemies have been made, especially one. Our new acolyte informs us that the man named Nash can be very dangerous to us. A man to be reckoned with. Our plans are too far along to halt our mission. In 1 week we will have acolytes in the mayor's office and among the commissioners. This city will belong to us. Our enemies will be removed. But first we will watch these museum people. Then we decide. Hail the serpent!
You've been listening to Tales from the Museum, Episode 1, The Cult of Serpents by Charles Russell. Our cast included Perry Whittle as Keith Nash, Amanda Fitzwater as Helen Mancuso, Alistair Stewart as Casey, Captain John Tattersack as Dr. Stein, and David Ault as Argus. Original music was composed by Joe Stuckey and Kevin MacLeod. The series is produced by Ellie Hirschman. Post-production by MJ Cogburn. Come back soon for more Tales from the Museum. This has been a Darker Projects production. No snakes are harmed in the recording of this episode.
Yeah. Oh, shit, man, what that is? Shout out Migo, shout out Zaytoven one time.
BBC Bike Rave.
Yeah.
Hey, what's up, UBC fam? Bike Rave is back. Deaf and badass. Swiper Snap is getting the grunge hips down to heavy
bass,
neon lights, and fast bikes. Join the boisterous conglomeration at Kerner's Plaza on March 27th at 8 p.m. We got the glow sticks. We got the music. You bring the party.
Get to the club at 2 a.m.
Get to the club at 2 a.m.
And you're tuned into CITR 101.9 FM. You're listening to Skald's Hull. My name is Brian McDonald, and we are coming up to the end of our program for this week. I want to repeat a few announcements that I had at the beginning of the show, just again. Next week, we're going to be bringing you some special programming. So Skald's Hull will be preempted. We are going to be bringing you different programming instead. Also, just so that you know, we have been invited to Vancouver Fan Expo. Skald's Hull and CITR 101.9 FM have been invited there. So we will be attending. However, I will join you Friday, April the 3rd via the magic of pre and post production. There will be a Skald's Hull episode as normal, although I personally will probably be live at the Van Expo during that time. So next week, we are going to be having the UBC Bike Rave, which will be broadcast between 8:30 and 10:30 next Friday, March 27th. Friday, April 3rd to Sunday, April 5th is the Vancouver Fan Expo. CITR 101.9 FM has been invited to go, and that will be me. I've also put in my name to see if I can get some interviews done. The deadline for that was today. I did it a very long time ago, so I'm hoping to hear back something this weekend. I have nothing new to report. Hopefully, though, I'll get at least a couple, and then I'll be able to air them. At any rate, I will be able to give an introspective on the April the 10th show. And coming up in a moment or two, we are going to have Canada Post Rock with John, which is always fun. So enjoy the rest of your evening. Enjoy your weekend from all of us here at CITR 101.9 FM.
This March 20th at the Wise Hall, She... a night featuring a powerhouse lineup of women making their bold mark in word and music, including Purple Heart Social Club, Lady